A golden shield with the letters WB inside it. Warner Brothers Pictures, a Warner Communications company. The film opens in early morning half light on the right-hand carriageway of a four-lane motorway, leading into the centre of Paris, and from the perspective of a travelling vehicle. French-registered cars with their lights on pass by, and on either side of the road there are tower blocks with giant illuminated red or blue words on their roofs. White captions follow the direction of the traffic. Warner Brothers presents a Mount Company production, a Roman Polanski film. Harrison Ford in Frantic. Starring Betty Buckley, John Mahoney, Jimmy Ray Weeks, Yorga Voyagis, David Huddleston, and introducing Emmanuel Seigner. The faint image of a man sitting in the back of a car with a woman asleep on his shoulder appears over the continuous motorway footage, becoming gradually clearer and eventually replacing it. Credits roll up the screen. Costume designer Anthony Powell. Production designer Pierre Gouffroy. Director of photography Witold Sopichinsky. Film editor Samu Steen. Music composed, orchestrated and conducted by Ennio Morricone. Written by Roman Polanski and Gerard Brach. Produced by Tom Mount and Tim Hampton. Directed by Roman Polanski. The man and woman travel in the back of a taxi. The African driver clicks his fingers. The woman wakes.
Do you know where you are?
No. It's changed too much.
It's now day. The woman nods off again.
Oh no!
The driver wrestles with the steering wheel and brings the car to a stop on the hard shoulder. He pulls on the handbrake, gets out and goes round to inspect the passenger side wheel. The male passenger, Richard Walker, gets out, leaving his wife Sandra to snooze. The driver gesticulates. The balding driver opens the boot of the Renault 25, releases a catch, and pulls out a punctured tire from under the chassis. He kicks the tire, then radios in. Richard gets back in. Sandra stirs.
We're at the hotel.
Flat tire.
Oui, j'ai des clients. Merci.
Sandra settles back to sleep on Richard's shoulder, and he pecks her on the forehead. The driver shuts the boot, then stands just inside the slow lane, impatiently waiting. A red warning triangle has been erected in the lane a little way back from the car. The walkers ride in the back of another taxi and stare mistrustfully at a dog sitting in the passenger seat, looking back at them. Now in the city centre, the taxi gets stuck behind a refuse truck.
Now do you know where you are? Yes.
Sandra smirks to herself. The refuse truck pulls away and the Peugeot taxi drives on, stopping halfway onto the pavement outside Le Grand Hotel. Richard, Sandra and the female driver climb out. A footman opening Sandra's door. A porter wheels a luggage trolley to the car and unloads the boot. Richard, who's suited, is in his 40s and tall with a rugged face and dark brown hair combed back. He enters the hotel with Sandra, also in her 40s, with short, neatly styled light brown hair and wearing a smart jacket and skirt. They stroll up to reception.
Morning. Reservations, please, for Walker.
Walker. Yes. You sign. May I have your passports?
Sandra hands them to Richard, who passes them to the receptionist. Richard signs a slip of paper. Sandra addresses a concierge, who holds out a key.
Excuse me, would you be kind enough to hold the doctor's calls?
Certainly, madame.
They start to go.
Dominique.
The receptionist, having taken the key from his colleague, returns to the desk to collect a large white folder. He strides up to the walkers and hands the folder to Richard before following the couple into a lift. Richard inspects the contents of the folder, which include a handwritten note. Richard puts on his glasses.
May I?
No, please.
On arrival, please confirm luncheon at the Jules Verne in the Eiffel Tower today at 1 p.m. Regards, Dr. Maurice Allenbert, Numero 45843253.
Richard wears a disinterested frown. The three of them step out of the lift.
This way, please.
The couple follow the suited receptionist along a corridor and up to a room door. The man opens the door and steps to one side.
Please.
Richard and Sandra enter. The receptionist turns on the main light. Richard puts his briefcase and folder on a table and coat over a chair.
The minibar.
He tours the room.
Light switch for the bedroom.
He turns it on.
The bathroom.
He indicates controls by the bed.
Here you can control the television, radio, message light.
The man puts the keys on a coffee table where there's a basket of fruit wrapped in cellophane and tied up with a red bow. He repositions a card sitting next to it.
Have a pleasant stay.
Yes.
Facing Sandra and bowing his head slightly, he shuts the room door.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice fruits.
Yeah, well, I would have preferred flowers.
Nice view. Oh,
it's magnificent.
The Paris Opera Building.
It should look exceptionally lovely from the Eiffel Tower this afternoon, where you and Dr. Allenbear can share it together.
She turns to face Richard.
I want to take a hot shower. But first, oh, let me have the notes so that I can confirm your luncheon.
What for?
Because you can't speak French and you don't know how to use the phone.
Honey, I'm not going to go. Don't confirm the
Why
luncheon.
Why not? You did tell Maurice Allenbear that you were arriving a day early, didn't
Honey.
You? Oh, Richard, you obviously want to see him. Now, come on, just give me the number. Richard, don't miss
I didn't note. Tell him when I was coming. Maurice Allenbear happens to be the chairman of the convention.
He snatches the note.
Richard, give me the note.
Holds the note above his head, then rams it into his mouth and cockily chews on it.
Richard, don't swallow it. You're going to choke.
Oh, now it's because...
Sandra makes a grab for the note, and Richard dives into the bathroom, hiding behind the shower screen.
Well, at least let me get you some water to wash it down.
Sandra fills a glass and passes it through the screen. Richard steps out.
Maurice Allenbear doesn't give a rat's ass about me. Now, since he saw you at the Berkeley seminar last year, I'll leave your lovely wife. Make sure to bring her to Paris.
Was he the one with the long legs? He took his shoes off when he spoke?
Richard takes the note out.
Never mind.
Richard holds up a finger for Sandra to wait.
How do you feel? Do you want some breakfast?
I've already eaten, thanks.
He holds up the note.
I'm going to order some café au lait and croissants. Do you want some?
Yes.
Richard opens the door to the porter.
Hello, room service? Oui, pour les chambres,
over here, please.
He puts the luggage on the bed.
Le petit déjeuner pour deux. Café au lait, deux café au lait. Oui, merci, café crème, oui, merci. Croissants avec confiture framboise. Oui, un pamplemousse. Et fraise. Ah, merci. Merci, au revoir.
Richard pays the porter, who leaves.
Honey, I'm going to call the kids.
You can dial direct.
I know.
There's a telephone sitting on a small desk.
Zero.
Zero.
19.
19.
1.
Yeah?
415.
I got it.
As Richard dials, Sandra behind him uses a key to open one of the two solid white suitcases lying on the bed. She starts to open the second case.
Walker's residence.
Hey, buddy.
Hiya, Dad.
How are you doing?
I'm all right.
It's 11 o'clock at night, Richie. What are you doing up?
You woke me up.
I know. Just testing. Somebody called for you from Paris.
What? I don't know anybody in Paris.
Hold on a second, honey. Mom wants to say hello.
Would you make these keys work? I can't get my suitcase open.
She takes the receiver.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm all right.
Are you sleeping? Who called me?
I don't know. Casey talked to
him. Him? Would you put Casey on? She left you alone?
Casey's out?
Well, when did she go out?
I don't know. She probably left.
You're not scared, are you? No. You go back.
Richard tries to open the case.
Well, you can call us anytime, okay? Okay. We'll call you tomorrow.
Bye.
Sweet dreams.
Richard finds a blank address label.
No wonder you can't get the keys to work. It's not your suitcase.
What do you mean it's not my suitcase?
I mean it's not your suitcase. It doesn't have your name tag. In fact, there's no name on it at all. The keys don't work. It's not your suitcase, dummy.
Sandra rubs her neck and glances quizzically at the case. Richard takes a toilet bag from a grey suit bag.
Walker, you did this on purpose. Because you want me to go shopping in Paris.
Au contraire.
Oh, no.
No. I'll get on TWA right away and get it straightened out.
He calls from a phone by the bed.
Yes, please, would you get me TWA? Besides, the lost luggage department, please. Besides, for the next 24 hours, you're not going to need anything to wear.
Promises.
TWA, bonjour.
Yes, please. I was on flight 862 this morning from San Francisco.
Yeah.
And my wife apparently picked up the wrong bag.
Samsonite?
Yes, Samsonite, you have it?
Oh, we have to, but it's always Samsonite. They look like, what's your tag number?
The tag number is...
He checks a tag on the open case.
Okay.
He checks a tag on his suit bag.
I love Paris.
Sandra's washing in the shower.
Why, oh, why do I love Paris?
The Grand Hotel.
Richard takes his shoes off.
Richard Walker. He's here.
Wearing a dressing gown, Sandra towel dries her hair. Richard has taken his shirt off.
So how about it?
They're going to send somebody to pick this one up and then you got to fill out a form for yours. And then you got to hope that whoever's got your stuff doesn't like it better than their own.
I was talking about breakfast in bed.
He hands her his trousers.
Within
a minute. Sandra sighs.
I love Paris in the spring.
She lifts the open case off the bed. Richard's in the shower, eyes closed and hair hanging over his forehead. He washes his face with soap. Sandra's lying on the bed when the outside phone rings. She sits up and answers it. Richard's oblivious. Sandra stands up, still clutching the receiver. Richard spots her.
Honey, I can't hear you.
Richard carries on washing, paying no attention to Sandra, who stands staring at him for a moment, then lifts the receiver back to her ear. She hangs up, then picks up a red top from the open case and calls out. Richard remains blissfully unaware. Sandra shrugs, then steps away from the bed and out of his view. The open suitcase is dragged off along the floor. The locked case still sits on the bed. Richard turns the water off. Later, he's brushing on shaving cream in front of the bathroom mirror.
We're awful quiet in there, babe. Haven't gone to sleep on me, have you? I ain't in here shaving for drill.
He finishes applying cream and washes the brush. He starts to shave with the razor.
You gonna get that, babe?
He holds his skin taut as he shaves. Richard rinses the razor, then glances round questioningly. He sets the razor down and, wrapping a towel around his waist, wanders out into the room. Sandra isn't there. Richard peers round the room. A waiter pushes a food trolley in. Richard leans out the door and checks both ways along the corridor. There's just a chambermaid's trolley at one end. The white-jacketed waiter leaves the room, closing the door. Wearing a dressing gown, Richard takes one of the two copious breakfast trays from the trolley and lays it on one side of the bed, taking a red rose from the tray and placing it on the pillow. He steps across the bed, takes the second tray, and setting it down at the side, sits behind it. He then puts the rose from his tray onto the same pillow. Sitting on the bed, Richard stares at the empty space beside him. Later, Richard's lying asleep, wearing his glasses, and with his head on the wooden bedhead. Conference papers are strewn across the sheets, and his arm is stretched across the other pillow, crushing the roses. Eyes still closed, Richard licks his lips, then swallows. He lifts his head, then looks at the mess around him. Holding a black pamphlet, Richard hoists himself a little unsteadily off the bed. He goes to the room door and gingerly opens it. A young bespectacled footman hands over a paper sack.
This is your... les affaires de toilette.
Richard looks at his wrist for a watch.
What time is it, please?
10 past 10, sir.
Richard rubs his eye.
Thank you.
Wearing a perturbed expression, Richard closes the door on the young ginger-haired lad, then spots his silver watch on the small telephone desk and picks it up. Clutching the timepiece, black pamphlet, and paper sack of toiletries, he slumps down heavily on the sofa and breathes a deep sigh. He adjusts the time on the watch before putting it and the pamphlet on the table, and checking the contents of the sack. He takes out a bag of cotton balls and some Sensodyne toothpaste. He puts the toothpaste down and stares contemplatively at Sandra's handbag lying at the end of the sofa. Dressed in a smart grey suit, Richard comes out into the busy hotel lobby and walks slowly around, looking this way and that. He peers over at the reception area, walks slowly past a newspaper stand, and ambles over to a bar area. Sandra is nowhere to be seen. Looking baffled, Richard heads for the main doors and walks onto the pavement outside Le Grand Hotel. He looks up and down the street, attracting the attention of a waiting doorman further along the pavement, then turns and strides back into the hotel. He approaches the reception desk, where a concierge is dealing with an elderly woman carrying a small dog. Richard goes to the desk and tries to catch someone's attention.
Certainly.
It does matter. Yeah, I can leave that. And can they fix a special dinner for my dog?
Yes.
I'm looking for my wife.
The concierge spots his key.
402. No messages, sir. Your passport.
Richard takes them.
Where's the guy who was here this morning? Good-looking guy was here this morning when I checked in.
Gaillard. Oh, he stops work at 8. Perhaps I can help you.
Richard puts the passports in his pocket.
Is the manager in? I'd like to speak to him. Would you get him for me, please?
Certainly, sir. If you please.
A bespectacled man with short-cropped white hair, manager Antoine Ostier, finds Richard waiting on a sofa in the lobby. He stands over him, fiddling with a gold pen.
Monsieur Walker?
Yes, Antoine Ostier, you wish to see me?
Yes, thank you.
They sit down together.
I checked in this morning with my wife.
Yes.
And while I was in the shower, she left the room.
Yes.
And she hasn't come back.
Well, how may I help you?
Oh.
A secretary wanting the manager's signature.
Merci. Does she know Paris?
Beg your pardon?
Maybe she's lost.
No. She wouldn't have gone out. She left her bag and she would have told me.
A telephone pour monsieur.
Ah.
For me? Ah.
Richard is handed the phone receiver in a telephone kiosk.
Hello?
Yes, Dr. Walker?
Yes.
Hello, Dr. Jana Perelman. Did you have a pleasant trip?
Yes, thank you
Dr.
very much.
Dr. Allen there asked me to call. We have a slight scheduling problem. Aortic valves seem to be a particularly temperamental group, so we wonder if you'd mind moving up a day, reading your paper tomorrow at 3.
No problem.
Oh, good. We'll have to get your slides in the morning.
Right, yes.
Oh, and Dr. Walker, about the lunch at the Eiffel Tower, would you like us to pick you up, or can you get there on your own?
I'm afraid we're going to have to cancel.
Oh, what
I'm sorry.
Pity. You know, it sounds like a tourist trap, but it's not. The food is marvelous.
No, that's not it. It's unavoidable, I'm afraid.
Oh, well, Dr. Allen there was hoping to see you and your lovely wife before all the madness starts. I'll have him call you, that's the best.
Yes, thank you.
Well?
No, there's something else.
Oh, this is Pascal, our head of security.
Does your wife know anybody in the hotel?
Not that I know of.
Have you checked with the concierge? He may have seen something.
He's off duty now. It was Gaia.
Gaia.
Why
don't we try to get him a ring?
Oh, please.
They go to reception.
Jean-Pierre, tu m'appelles Gaia, s'il te plaît. Is your wife diabetic or...
I'm a doctor. It's It's not a medical problem.
Allô, je suis bien chez Monsieur Gaillard. Je voudrais parler à ton papa. He says his father is sleeping. Ta maman est là? Non. Alors réveille ton papa. He's not supposed to wake him.
The manager takes the phone.
Allô? Écoute, réveille ton papa. Dis-lui que c'est Antoine Hostier, directeur du Grand Hôtel, et c'est urgent. Hostier, tu as bien compris, mon petit madame. Hostier.
We'll call back later.
Have you checked around the hotel?
Yes, I looked in the newspaper place, the bar, outside everywhere.
How about the ladies' room?
No.
Richard follows smart-suited, dark-haired Pascal down steps to the toilets. A maid is cleaning one of the stalls.
Ah, Guylaine, monsieur cherche sa femme. Vous n'auriez pas vu l'américaine par hasard?
Pascal checks another stall. Pascal goes into the gents and checks another stall, then turns to Richard, who has his hands buried deep in his trouser pockets.
Well, clearly she's not here.
Richard leaves the hotel and jogs across the street. Music blares from a car. He walks into a flower shop opposite and nervously calls out to a dark-haired woman who's tidying a large arrangement behind the front desk.
Excuse me.
Monsieur.
Do you speak English?
Non, pas du tout.
He finds a photo.
Wait, just a second, please. Excuse me, I'm looking for this lady. I'm looking. I think she
might... Qu'est-ce que c'est, Martine?
Je ne sais pas, je comprends pas ce qu'il veut.
I'm looking for my wife. My wife.
Ah.
I think she might...
Vous voulez des fleurs pour votre femme. Pardon. Des roses?
Non, non, non. It's...
Non, il ne veut pas de roses.
The flower vendor sees Richard depart. Outside, Richard worriedly rubs his brow and heads into a nearby bar. A bearded, unkempt customer wearing a bandana is leaning against the counter. Richard eyes him.
Et pour monsieur?
Espresso, please.
Any place, huh?
Excuse me, speak English?
I don't.
My wife.
Attendez. Jacques! Demain un peu ce qu'il veut, là. Allez, en loc.
A waiter comes over.
Yeah. What do you want?
I'm looking for my wife, this one here. I was wondering if she might have come in this morning. She had no coat, she was wearing a red dress.
Cherche sa femme.
Pardon me?
A lot of people come here, you know. Sorry.
Il y a de l'embrouille là-bas.
Over there, this morning, in the passage. Man put a woman in the car.
Tu vas t'arrêter d'emmerder les clients?
N'emmerde pas, je lui explique pour sa femme.
This woman?
Richard shows the photo.
Coming with me, yes. I explain to you.
Please.
The barman wants payment for the coffee.
I'm sorry. How much?
Five. Merci.
The unkempt man pushes his glass forward.
12.
12.
Well. Merci.
The unkempt bearded man leads Richard out through the door, then into a small alley and down a side street next to the bar.
Around here. Yes, it is true. Incredible. Incredible story.
What exactly did you see?
Exactly. Two friends of mine vu la scène. They saw everything.
They saw what? What did they see?
One man pushed with brutality the poor woman in the car.
He puts his hands on his hips.
She's your wife.
Where are these friends of yours?
Later.
When?
They go back later, you know.
When?
you haven't figured it.
I don't smoke, but...
Richard steps forward to give the man some money. As he does so, something catches his eye. He goes over to a 2CV parked nearby. A silver identity bracelet is lying on the cobbled street near the back wheel. Richard stands up, fingering the small silver bracelet, with the name Sondra engraved on it. Pascal and Richard are at the police station. A man behind the counter is typing Sondra's details onto a form. A plainclothes detective questions Pascal.
Il s'affole pas un peu vite, votre client, hein?
Un peu, oui. Cette histoire de gourmette, là, c'est pas du tout évident.
Joe.
Pareil, ça.
Blue, grey, really.
Bleu.
Pascal offers Richard a cigarette.
Cigar.
The detective takes one.
Visage. Face.
What about it?
The shape.
It's thin, narrow at the jaw, rounded forehead.
Oval.
Peut-être un coup de foot pour autre chose que la Tour Eiffel, non?
Paris.
City of lights.
Listen, I expect you people to take me seriously.
You are being taken perfectly seriously here, sir.
The detective to Richard.
As a matter of fact, you have a special treatment. Usually we fill up this form after a week or so. Usually we just take a deposition. Voilà. La main courante. Okay? This is the procedure.
The detective indicates a page in a heavy book, then puts it away.
Photo.
Richard hands over the snapshot from his wallet of he and Sandra standing with their kids near the Golden Gate Bridge. The man at the typewriter cuts Sandra's image out with scissors. He hands the photo back to Richard, who stares grimly at the missing square where his wife should be, and puts it back in his wallet.
You see, the thing is that even if they find Mrs. Walker, they cannot disclose her whereabouts without her consent. Unless you get the attorney of the Republic to make a formal request.
What are you talking about? Why wouldn't my wife want me to know where she's at?
You and your wife have been to Paris before?
Yes, on our honeymoon.
Is it possible she met someone then? Someone she has been thinking about?
Richard stops walking and stares at Pascal.
Since June 15, 1968?
Please, don't take offense. I'm an ex-cop. In my business, we've seen this type of thing before.
Can we call the concierge again, see if he's awake?
Hello, I'm Gaillard. Oui, bonjour, là, c'est Pascal du Grand Hôtel. Je voudrais parler à Claude, s'il vous plaît.
Ah bon? It's his wife, Gaillard's gone out.
Where?
Je peux le trouver où, s'il vous plaît? Gym Tonic.
Gin and Tonic, a bar.
Gym Tonic, a gymnasium. Bon, ben, je vous remercie, Anne Gaillard. Hein?
Au revoir.
Do you have an address?
Pascal holds up his hands. The concierge hands over two phone books. Pascal finds the number and gets on the phone.
Oui, bonjour, monsieur. Je voudrais parler à monsieur Gaillard, s'il vous plaît.
Oui, un client, oui.
Ah, they don't take calls for customers.
Tell them it's an emergency.
Non, monsieur, c'est très important. They hung up.
Richard rips the page out of the phone book and leaves the hotel with it. Richard gets a cab to the gym and heads inside. A man in a grey sweat top with Gym Tonic written on the back leads Richard into a weight room full of men pumping iron. The gym assistant locates Gaillard pressing weights on his back on a bench. He helps him steady the weight back onto its stand. Gaillard, who's glistening with sweat and wearing grey sweatpants and a sleeveless t-shirt, approaches Richard at the door.
Dr.
Walker. 402.
Sorry.
Is there something I can do for you, sir?
Yes, my wife. Do you remember my wife?
Yes.
She left the hotel this morning while you were on duty, I think. Did you see her?
Yes, I spoke to her.
He wipes his face with the towel.
What did she say?
She asked me to send up some toilet articles. And then she left with the man who had called her.
I don't understand. Ma'am?
Well, a man asked me if Mrs. Walker was staying at the hotel. I said she was. So we called your room. Then a few minutes later, your wife came down. She asked me to get her some toothpaste, a toothbrush, and what you call to take up makeup. Take makeup off your face. It's
cotton balls.
Cotton balls. And they left together. Is there some problem?
Richard's taken aback. He struggles for words.
Did she seem to know him? Were they talking together? Did you notice anything else?
I noticed she had wet hair, which is a bit strange. I didn't really hear what they were saying, but he had his arm around her.
Around her waist? Or...
No, around her shoulder.
What did he look like, this man?
Tall, well-dressed, Moustache, dark skin. He had an accent.
An accent?
Not American, if you know what I mean. More like Middle East.
Richard absorbs this information, then pulls out some money.
Thank you very much for your help.
Dr. Walker.
Bear smiles. Richard folds his cash.
Sorry, thank you very much.
Richard shakes Gaia's hand and heads out. Later, he speaks to a security guard outside the American embassy.
I'm sorry, sir. You'll have to wait your turn.
But this is an emergency, you understand?
Yes, sir.
You understand, but you don't give a damn, is that it?
I'm sorry, sir. We have a lot of emergencies. You have to wait like everyone else.
Has everyone else had their wife kidnapped?
I don't know, sir.
The guard stares blankly back at Richard, who looks him up and down and strides angrily away. He joins the back of the queue, which is about 30 people long, and snakes around the corner away from the embassy security gates. Later, he's standing at a security window while a uniformed soldier on the other side checks his passport.
Where you from, sir?
San Francisco, just like it says on the passport.
You step through the metal detector, please.
Here, I'll take that, sir.
The passport. Richard steps through.
I'll step back through and remove all the metal objects from your pockets.
Richard puts his hotel keys and some change on the counter and passes back through the metal detector. His keys and money are handed back.
I keep your passport, sir. You're supposed to wear this pass in your building, sir. Thank you.
Richard tries to get out of a security door. Richard finally gets out. In an office, Richard assists a grey-haired official, Williams, who's filling out another form.
Eyes?
Blue. Both of them.
Blue. Face?
Oval.
Blue. I know this must seem like annoying bureaucracy, but really, we have to get one of these over to the prefecture to police whenever we're dealing with a missing person.
I've already been to the police. I filled out one of these damn forms, and it's not a missing person. It's a kidnapping.
Don't you think that's a little bit premature to be so positive?
No, I don't think. I have witnesses. My wife was kidnapped. Do you understand what I'm saying to you?
Yes, yes, of course. But what would you like us to do exactly?
Richard stares at Williams.
I want you to find my wife.
Williams shrugs.
You understand, Dr. Walker. Ours is basically a liaison function. Now, we can assist you in communicating with the French police. We can put a little pressure on the Ministry of Interior, but this is their country. It's their jurisdiction. We can't just send a posse out after her.
What do you do here?
I'm head of American services. Visa applications, registering births, any kind of general...
Is there somebody here who can help me?
William stares at Richard and lightly taps his thumbs together.
Why don't you have a word with our security officer?
In another office...
Are you rich?
No. Well, I'm well off. I'm a surgeon.
Are you involved in politics?
No.
What about your wife?
They're the same. We don't even vote anymore, I'm afraid.
It doesn't seem to be very much to go on to support your kidnapping theory. This is your only evidence. She could have just dropped it. It's a bit flimsy. Doesn't close very well.
It used to.
Richard picks up Sondra's ID bracelet.
You were in the shower when this person called your wife, is that right?
Yes.
So you didn't actually hear any of their conversation?
No. None of it. They spoke for a moment. And then she went downstairs to meet him.
Meet him?
Yes, meet him. And when they left the hotel, he had his arm around her. You know what
Walker.
It means to me? He had his arm around her? Here, like this. He could have had a gun.
Like this?
Here, pointed right at her. Shut up, smile, walk, up lobby. Huh? Like this, huh?
Yes, yes, it could mean that. Or they could have just been having a good time.
Richard loosens his grip on Williams.
You must be thinking about yours.
Richard leaves the office. Williams and the balding security officer watch him go. Later, Richard stands in the side road opposite the hotel in the gathering twilight and gazes at the cobbled street near the 2CV where he found Sondra's ID bracelet. He turns away and heads purposefully back into the Grand Hotel and up to the reception desk.
402, please.
The concierge hands him an envelope. Richard puts on his reading glasses.
What's this?
The TWA came by to fetch some suitcase.
Richard reads the letter.
No other messages?
No, sir.
Nothing.
He asked if you could leave it in the luggage room.
Yeah. Have my key, please.
Richard puts his glasses away.
Your key is not here, Mr. Walker.
A smile flickers on Richard's face, and he turns eagerly away. His step slows as he feels the keys in his pocket.
Jet lag.
I send the bellboy.
In his room, Richard is filling in the forms from the TWA. He circles a picture of a suitcase like Sondra's under the heading Group A, non-zipper type bags. He looks up slowly from the desk, stares thoughtfully at the cream suitcase that Sondra picked up by mistake, and pulls off his reading glasses. He slowly rises, walks over to the suitcase, picks it up, and gives it a good shake. He carries the case over to the minibar. He pulls a corkscrew from the minibar and kneels down by the suitcase, using the implement to prise open one of the locks. He turns his attention to the opposite lock, but cannot get it open. He turns back to the open side and tries to prise the case apart with brute force. He finally busts the lock, and the case springs open. The case has two compartments. Richard pulls some colourful garments out of the first. There's an events program and a collection of blank postcards. Richard examines them, then tosses them aside. He pulls out a rectangular souvenir nameplate with Michelle embossed on it and chucks it to one side. He removes a copy of Elle magazine and some more clothes and pulls a toy train out of its presentation box. Richard puts it aside and pulls a small model of the Statue of Liberty out of the case with a pair of tights wrapped around it. He puts it aside and then scoops out the few remaining items, including a duty-free pack of Marlboro cigarettes and a small transistor radio. Richard opens the other suitcase compartment, tosses out some more clothes, and finds only a bulky toilet bag, which he empties out. Amongst the makeup and toiletries, he finds a set of keys with a blue parrot keyring attached. He examines the keys, then tosses them back into the case. He rifles through some more of the contents and finds a book of matches with an image of a blue parrot on the front that matches the keyring. Richard snatches up the keys and examines the matches. They come from the Blue Parrot Bar Restaurant Club. Inside, someone has scrawled the name, Diddy, and a telephone number. Richard looks up at the door, then gets to his feet and answers it.
Yes. I've come for the suitcase, sir.
Just a minute, please.
Richard pushes the door to and hastily scoops up the heap of clothes and contents back into the suitcase. He presses everything down and tries to close the case, trapping his tie in it. He yanks out his tie and struggles with the broken locks. Eventually giving up, he lifts the case up in his arms and carries it out to the porter in the hallway.
Thank you. And this.
He hands him the paperwork from TWA.
Thank you.
Richard dials the number inside the book of matches.
Please call Dr. Richard Walker at the Grand Hotel Intercontinental. Je parle non français. It's important.
Richard pulls the matchbook towards him and stares at the telephone number and the name Dede. He turns it over and looks at the blue parrot symbol. A taxi pulls up outside the Blue Parrot bar and Richard gets out of it. There's a neon sign shaped like a blue parrot on the wall by the entrance. Richard pays the driver and heads inside. The club is packed with a young, fashionable crowd. Richard makes his way through the throng and walks along the packed bar counter past a couple jigging to the music. People push past Richard, who looks a little out of place with his serious expression and grey suit. A woman with a blonde ponytail and her male companion leave the bar area, and Richard steps up to the counter and signals to the barman. A man in a hat standing next to Richard wafts himself with a paper fan.
Beer.
Two bottles, Heineken?
Yes.
The barman returns with a bottle and a glass.
Do you know someone here named Dee Dee?
The barman stares at Richard.
Day-day.
The barman serves someone else. A couple move away from the counter and Richard sits down. He puts his glass aside and swigs his bottled beer. A dude with afro hair calls over.
You looking for Day-Day, man?
He grins at Richard.
Yeah, you know him?
Yeah, man. You don't look like you know him.
What am I supposed to look like?
Desperate, man.
Richard nods.
Yeah, well, I'm desperate.
So where you from, man? New York?
San Francisco.
Much better, man.
Yeah.
North Beach. Much, much better, man. Many places to dance. If you go to San Francisco.
Richard grins.
Be sure to wear a flower in your hair. Come on, man, buy me a Kahlua and tell Jack about your desperate troubles.
Well, all I really need, man, is Day-Day.
All the boys and girls are looking for Day-Day these days. But Day-Day been gone, you know, two nights.
Yeah, but where?
Man, why not say what you're looking for? Day-Day not the only one who can show you.
Why don't you tell me what I'm looking for?
The white lady. No, isn't that so?
Richard sits up and nods.
Yes.
Hey, man, now I see the desperate man.
She all right?
Beautiful man. Nobody has touched the lady. You don't worry, man. Follow me.
Jack takes Richard by the arm and leads him into the men's toilets. They head into a stall at the end, and Jack closes the door.
Where is she?
Cool, man. No one has so much as stepped on her toe. She's here, man. And pure as the driven snow.
Hey. White powder in a small wrap.
Come on, man, give it a try. Do a one-on-one and tell me if I lie.
A fingernail full of it.
Come now, man, the nose.
Richard reluctantly snorts the powder.
The white lady. Pure white.
Richard blinks hard.
Good, not true?
Sliding the wrap into Richard's pocket.
600 francs. You don't need Diddy, man.
Richard pulls out some franc notes. There's not enough.
No.
Someone tries to get into the stall. Richard shoves the door closed and pulls out some American currency.
Dollars.
All right, man.
Now look, one more of these for Diddy's address, huh?
Jack gives Richard's hand a friendly slap and heads out. Richard holds onto the door and leans his head against it. A young man who was waiting for the stall walks away. Richard sticks his finger up his sore nostril, then braces himself and heads back out into the gents. He walks over to the sink and tries to wash out his nose. Richard catches sight of himself in the mirror and dabs a bit of white powder off his tie. He picks up a piece of toilet paper to dry his face, but finds it's attached to something else, and tosses it onto the floor as he goes back into the bar. Jack's talking to a glamorous lady sitting at a table with friends. She's wearing a military-style cap and bright red lipstick. She lowers her shades and talks to Jack, who soon swaggers back over to Richard sitting at the bar.
You have a stylo, man? You have a pen?
Richard takes a pen from his inside jacket pocket and hands it to Jack, who has a goatee beard, long black hair in a ponytail, and numerous earrings. Jack opens out a book of matches and writes something on the inside of the flap. He then slides the pen and matchbook back to Richard, who passes him a banknote under the table. A taxi pulls up on a quiet street and Richard climbs out of the back. The driver hands him some change through the window and Richard returns a coin as a tip. The taxi driver gives Richard the matchbook, then motors off down a damp, deserted street. Richard heads through a tall, thick wooden door, then along a glimmering, cobbled passageway between two buildings. He enters a dimly lit building through glass-panelled doors. Richard then steps down into a narrow entrance hall, where metal mailboxes are lined up on a wall. He peers into one of them, then checks through the slot with his hand. He presses an illuminated button on the wall. Lights come on. Richard turns and walks up a curving staircase. He reaches a landing, glances at an apartment door, then steps up to a second one and runs his thumb across the name tag on the buzzer. Richard pulls his glasses on to read it. He presses the grubby buzzer button above the name tag, which has Dede Martin written on it. Richard takes off his glasses and slips them into his top jacket pocket, then puts his hands in his trouser pockets and waits. The lights go out and Richard looks around in surprise, then turns his attention back to the door. Hearing a noise, he looks up and steps to a window. A couple stagger arm in arm along the cobbled passageway. Richard watches them, then returns to the apartment door, which is slightly ajar. Richard treads on something, then looks at the floor. He reaches out and pushes the door open. He steps cautiously inside and stops. A grey cat sitting on a chair arm jumps down and trots up to him. Richard stops the cat leaving and closes the door.
Hello.
The main room is messy and unlit, but a door leading into a kitchen is ajar and light floods out through the gap. Richard treads warily towards the door.
Hello.
He arrives at the door.
Hello.
He pushes it fully open. There's a half-finished breakfast on a table, and on the floor, slumped against the fridge, sits the dead body of a bald-headed man. His throat has been slashed, and there are bloodstains on the lino and down the fridge door. Staring anxious at the body, Richard turns and marches to the apartment door. Pulling the door open, he sees a couple at it on the landing below. He pushes the door too. He faces into the room and fidgets. Fiddling with his watch, Richard looks up and stares at a telephone across the room. Richard has stepped up to the telephone. He stands over it. He takes out his glasses and puts them on, then presses a rewind button on the answer phone unit. As the tape rewinds, Richard's hand hovers uncertainly over the control buttons. He presses play.
Allô, c'est moi, c'est Michel. Bon, je suis revenu et j'ai fait un bon voyage. Je te verrai ce soir au Blue Parrot. Surtout, n'oublie pas mon fric, hein. Grosse bise.
Richard stares in wide-eyed incomprehension at the answer phone machine.
Please call Dr. Richard Walker, Grand Hotel.
Richard presses another button, and a flap pops up. He takes one of two cassettes from inside. Later, he gingerly opens the apartment door and peers out. The landing is empty, and he slips out, pulling the door to behind him. As he walks off, the door glides open, and the grey cat pads out. In the hotel lobby, Behind reception, Gaia looks up and sees Richard enter. He stops what he's doing and fetches the key.
No messages, huh?
Nothing here. Let me check with your operator.
Thank you.
Gaia makes a call.
Why don't you go to the gym and do some sports, Dr. Walker? Martine, oui, 402, Dr. Walker, est-ce que tu as eu des appels? Un homme ou une femme? Très bien, merci. There were a couple of calls for you, but the man wouldn't leave a message.
Son of a bitch. Would you come to my room for a moment?
Very well.
Gaia gathers up some keys from the reception counter and follows Richard. Later they step out of a lift and stroll down a corridor towards room 402. There's a Do Not Disturb tag on the handle, which Richard lifts off and stares at in puzzlement. He then puts the key in the lock and opens the door. Richard and Gaia step into the room to find it has been ransacked. Drawers lie open, the TV has been taken apart, and the contents of the minibar emptied onto the carpet. Papers and photographic slides are strewn across the floor. The fruit basket and sofa have been searched. The bed has been dragged apart and the sheets pulled off. The two men wander round.
Holy salo.
The suitcase.
I'll call the police.
No. Not now. I left a suitcase in the luggage room. Do you get it for me, please?
It's gone.
What?
They took it.
Who?
TWA, just after I came on duty.
Richard stares at the floor with a furrowed brow. He then bends down and picks up a pocket tape recorder, takes the tape out, and puts the answerphone cassette in its place.
Shut the door.
He plays the tape.
I want you to tell me what this says.
Allô, c'est moi, c'est Michel.
It's me. It's Michel.
J'ai fait un bon voyage.
I'm back, I've made a good trip.
Je te verrai ce soir au Blue Parrot.
I'll see you tonight at the Blue Parrot. Don't forget my money, I kiss you.
They look down at the tape player.
Please call Dr. Richard. Call Folsom. I'm sorry. It's important.
Richard Ford winds the tape.
Alors, Dédé, je t'attends, moi. Tu viens ou quoi?
She's waiting for Dédé.
J'étais obligée de laisser ma valise dans ta consigne à la con.
She...
Faut que tu me la récupères.
Something about her leaving a suitcase in some locker. She's got nothing to dress and no keys.
Richard stares anxiously into space. He looks back down at the tape player. Gaia stands opposite him, his expression grim.
Ouais, c'est encore moi. Mais qu'est-ce que tu fous?
It's her again.
Bon, j'en ai marre.
She's angry now.
Je t'attends au Blue Parrot jusqu'à la fermeture et puis je viens chez toi.
She'll wait at the Parrot till it closes. And then she go to his place.
What time do nightclubs close?
4 or 6, it depends.
Richard lights a flimsy match from the Blue Parrot matchbook and holds the flame over his watch to read the time. It's 4:07 a.m. Richard blows the match out and lets it drop. He's sitting in a dark corner on the floor somewhere in the entrance hall of Dede's block of flats. His head droops wearily, then jolts back up as he stops himself from nodding off. The grey cat sits on one of the wooden stairs, its eyes fixed on him. Michelle, the woman from the Blue Parrot with the army-style leather cap and leather biker's jacket, enters the building and turns the lights on. She strides up the stairs, unaware that Richard, still huddled in the corner, is nervously watching her. Michelle reaches the landing and stops, seeing that Dede's apartment door is open. She steps towards the door and creeps through. Richard pulls himself to his feet.
Dede?
In the apartment. Michelle walks over to the kitchen door. Meanwhile, Richard starts to climb the stairs. Michelle races out of the apartment and leans against a wall, panting. She turns to go and encounters Richard.
Listen!
Richard grabs her arms. Michelle swings her bag at him. Then they tumble down the stairs. Richard sits on her and covers her mouth.
Where is she?
Quoi? Please don't
tell me! Answer me, where is she?
What do you want?
My wife.
What wife?
Where's my wife?
Why did you kill Dede? Why did you kill him?
I didn't kill him. I didn't kill anyone.
What do you want from me?
Richard stares maniacally at Michelle, then lifts her upright by the collar of her jacket. He takes out the matchbook.
Look. Huh?
He holds a lighted match to the inside of the flap.
Look familiar.
Where did you get that?
In your suitcase.
So you have it. Don't pay me what you owe me. I did my job.
Job?
That's right. You know what I mean.
No, I don't know what you mean. All I know is that I have your suitcase and you have my wife's. Do you understand?
No, I don't understand.
You picked up the wrong suitcase at the airport.
Michelle covers her face.
You understand? Huh?
Please, I must have that suitcase.
What did you bring back? What do they want?
Please, we must leave here. Quick, quick, please.
She looks pleadingly at him. Richard gets angrily to his feet and goes to the entrance. He steps out into the moonlight, followed by attractive, long, fair-haired Michelle. They walk back down the cobbled passageway.
You were on Flight 862.
Yes.
From San Francisco.
Yes, this morning.
I want your ticket.
What for?
You want your suitcase? I want your ticket.
It's at my apartment.
Well, let's go. Where do we get a cab?
I have a car.
They pass through the tall, thick wooden door and walk out onto the damp, deserted street. Michelle leads the way towards a VW Beetle, parked some way down the road. She gets in the driver's door, and Richard climbs in the other side. Later, they ascend stairs to a landing. Michelle turns.
Here, hold this.
Her bag and cap. She opens a window and climbs out.
Hey! Hey!
I'm not going to jump, okay? I don't have my key. My roommate's in Bangkok. And you know where my key is, don't you?
She disappears onto the roof. Richard looks over the window ledge at the long drop to the ground, then strolls back along the landing to an apartment door. Richard presses an illuminated switch. The lights come on. Richard studies a sticker on the black painted door frame showing a pair of red lips. He gazes absently round, then steps away from the door and leans back against a wall. He closes his eyes, swallows and sighs. Michelle comes out.
You see, I didn't fly away.
They go into a cramped, messy apartment.
I have to call my hotel. Telephone?
Over there.
Richard looks for a phone on a table with a lamp on it, but can't see one.
Where?
There. Here.
She picks up the receiver of a phone shaped like Garfield the cat and passes it to an incredulous Richard. He listens and hands it back.
Oh, it's dead. Sonia didn't pay the bill. My roommate, bitch.
A ticket? Where's the ticket?
Michelle goes into her bedroom and searches carelessly through some magazines.
Oh, I threw it away. Maybe it's... Wait.
She goes to the kitchen and pulls out a bin from behind a low curtain. Rummaging around inside the bin, she locates the ticket and gives it to Richard.
Okay. I give you my ticket, you give me my suitcase.
Are you going to put it back in the locker?
Oh, you are with the people who follow me this morning.
I'm not with anyone.
How do you know about the locker?
I listened to Data's telephone messages.
You don't speak French.
I had it translated.
Why is it so important?
I have your suitcase. You have my wife's suitcase. You put my wife's suitcase in the locker this
morning. I'm sorry, I can't get it back.
What are you saying?
The suitcase. I can't get it back anymore.
I don't care about the suitcase. I'm looking for her.
Who?
Michelle takes her leather boots off.
My wife, goddammit!
He sits on a chair.
You put my wife's suitcase in the locker this morning, and it didn't have what they wanted in it. But it had my wife's name tag, our telephone number. They came to the hotel and they took her.
Your wife?
They kidnapped her.
But they want my suitcase. Why does it take your wife?
When I find them, I'll ask them. Who hired you?
Dede hired me.
Who hired Dede?
I don't know. I don't... If they knew me, they would kill me. I gave them the wrong suitcase this morning and instead they killed Dede.
No, I don't think so.
You think I lie?
You gave him the wrong suitcase this morning. Day-Day's been dead for over one day.
Who says?
I say.
How do you know? You're a doctor?
No corpse stinks that much after just 12 hours. Not even Day-Day's. Take my word for it. Yes, I am a doctor. What did you bring back from San Francisco? Was it dope?
No.
Isn't that what you do for a living, smuggle dope?
Not this time.
And what was it?
All right, it was dope.
What kind? Heroin, cocaine, opium?
What do you care?
It matters.
I don't know what kind, and I don't care. I'm very frightened. You want your wife back, you'll get my suitcase.
She wanders into the bedroom and dumps the boots on the floor. She starts to undress. Richard holds his head in his hand. Heavy-browed, Richard stands up and removes his jacket. He hangs it on the back of a chair. He walks into the bathroom, scratching his head. He points up at a skylight and looks at Michelle through an open connecting doorway.
Is this how you got in?
Yeah.
As Richard wrings out a face flannel, Michelle, standing in front of a bed with toys and clothes strewn across it, removes her belt and pulls off her black t-shirt, revealing her elegant frame. Noticing this, Richard pushes the door shut. The door springs open. Richard washes his hands. Michelle, now wearing a black cropped vest top and with her unfastened belt hanging around the waist of her jeans, wanders through to the lounge. She reaches into the pocket inside Richard's jacket and takes out two passports. She looks inside them both. Turning to get a towel, Richard notices Michelle looking at the photograph in one of the passports. He walks up behind her.
Can I help you?
Is this your wife?
Yes.
He takes it.
She seems very happy.
Yes, she's happy. She's a happy person, that's her nature.
Later, Michelle, wearing her leather jacket, drives along a highway in the darkness with Richard beside her. She glances in the mirror.
Merde.
Richard looks up, frowning.
What?
They're following me.
He looks round.
Oh.
There was a man on the plane. I saw him on a train from the airport, too. I lost him at the station before I get to the lock.
Richard stares menacingly.
Who are they? The police?
No, I don't think so.
Then who?
Maybe the people that hired me. Didi. Hired Didi.
Richard looks ahead, then back at Michelle.
Stop.
No.
Stop, I want to talk to him. Stop!
Richard frowns angrily at Michelle, who pulls onto the hard shoulder. A hatchback zooms by, flashing both of its indicators as it passes. Watching the car pass, Michelle starts to bite her nails.
Can we go now?
I tell you, I'm being followed.
Take your fingers out of your face and drive us to the airport.
He yanks her hand away from her face and points forwards. In the airport car park, Michelle parks her Beetle next to a pair of advertising hoardings. Michelle and Richard get out. Michelle marches to a line of elevators past one that opens. Richard points to it and they get inside. Up in the terminal building, Michelle leads Richard down a futuristic curved corridor, through a doorway, and up to a lost luggage desk. Richard hands the uniformed clerk behind the desk a ticket.
We have a lost bag.
The clerk studies the ticket.
What sort of bag?
White Samsonite.
Michelle points at a suitcase on a shelf. The clerk goes over to it, checks the ticket on the handle and picks it up. As Michelle carries it out the door, Richard grabs it off her.
Here, let me help you. Now, what has it got? False bottom? Huh? The suitcase.
Two guards with dogs approach.
Jesus Christ, those dogs are drug trained.
Michelle chews gum coolly.
It's not drugs.
Then what's in it?
What do you care what's in it? I don't know what's in it. It's not drugs, that's all I know.
The guards stroll past.
Do you want your wife back or what? Then relax, be cool, and just walk. We'll give them what they want. You will get your wife, I will get my money, and everybody will be happy. Except Didi.
Is there a doctor in the house?
Richard looks round.
Is there a doctor in the house? Dickie!
A balding man blusters over.
Peter, we missed you. Where were you hiding? Up in first class, I'll bet.
No, we got here yesterday.
Got here yesterday? You haven't found your way out of the airport yet? I thought I was wrecked.
No, mixed up with the bags.
Peter wrinkles his brow skeptically.
Listen, I tell you the truth, I am a little wrecked. I hope I don't miss your speeches tomorrow, right?
No, Peter. Today.
Today?
Yeah.
Well, I hope you don't miss it. Listen, have you got a match? Erwin, look who's here.
Pulling out his matches, Richard drops a folded piece of paper on the ground. As Peter's associate comes over, Richard pushes the note with his foot. Michelle picks it up.
Hi, Richard.
Edie, how are you?
I was wondering when we'd be seeing you.
Edie spots Michelle.
So, how's Sandra?
She's fine, Edie, fine.
Oh, great. So you two have been in Paris for a day or so, I gather.
Yes.
Well then, when we get to the hotel, I'm going to wake her up and see if she wants to come and have breakfast with me.
Yes, do that.
See if there are any new faces in her life.
Listen, will you help me with this, Dickie? Just till we get through customs.
As Richard goes to help Peter with his cases at the baggage claim, Michelle sneers at Edie and walks off with the white case. Rejoining Peter's group, Richard looks around anxiously.
Looking for your little friend? She's gone through there already.
Peter, I...
Richard puts down the cases he was carrying for Peter and runs off down the bustling corridor. Richard emerges from the elevator in the car park and runs to where the Beetle was. It's gone. Richard helplessly runs through the car park and stops. He spots the Beetle driving up a ramp to a higher level. Richard tears across to the stairwell, barging the doors open. Richard runs up the concrete stairs, his face wrought with anguish. He reaches the next level, only to see the Beetle rising up another ramp. Richard clambers up the next flight of stairs and looks across the parking space. There's no sign of the Beetle. Richard runs up another flight of stairs and looks out onto the rooftop level, where the Beetle is at the exit barrier. Richard runs over and thrusts the parking receipt through the open passenger window at Michelle. Bemused, Michelle does so, and Richard gets in the car. Exasperated, Richard leans his elbow out the window. A red and white barrier rises, and Michelle drives off. Later, they drive along a four-lane highway. In the distance, the sunrise tinges the cloudy sky pink.
What kind of music do you like?
Richard struggles to think.
I don't know. Old music. Oldies,
yeah,
mostly.
Yeah, me too. You like this?
He smiles mockingly.
This is not old.
Three, 4 years?
Richard looks away and grasps his forehead. Michelle takes out a folded piece of paper, unfolds it with her teeth, opens it, and dips her finger in.
Could you hold the wheel, please? Because it's cold.
She rubs white powder on her gums. Richard grabs the paper and throws it out the window.
God damn it!
Merde! What did you do?
Put your hands on the wheel.
It's good coke. That was 500 francs at least.
Your eyes on the road and get us where we're going.
Michelle runs her tongue over her gums.
Christ.
Richard puts a hand to his forehead despairingly. A refuse truck pulls away from the Grand Hotel as the battered yellow Beetle convertible pulls up. Richard, looking weary, gets out of the car.
Thanks. You can go on home now. I got the suitcase. I don't
need
your
help. Ça va pas, non?
Unless you want to tell me what's in it, no thanks.
You think I'm stupid? If I tell you, then you really don't need me.
You do know what's in it, don't you?
No, I don't, but it's my suitcase. And I will certainly tell him that.
She points at the doorman.
You've me confused. I'm very hungry.
Richard looks at the floor. Michelle has grabbed her case back and is staring at him meaningfully. He turns to the doorman and raises a finger as if to say one moment, then directs Michelle into the hotel. He follows and grabs her arm. She resists.
There is a message for you, Dr. Walker.
Richard grabs the folded paper off Gaillard without taking the key he's also offering. Richard opens the note and hands it back to Gaillard.
What does he say, Dr. Allenby? Will you translate for me, please?
He wants the slides for your lecture, and he wishes you to drop them off at the Palais des Congrès before lunch.
Would you order me some breakfast, please?
Certainly. One or two?
Who?
Tea or coffee?
My coffee.
Gaillard watches them go and smiles. He picks up the phone. Richard and Michelle enter his room. She looks around in the darkness at the mess.
Oh la la, le bordel. I thought my place was messy.
Yeah, well, there's always someone who'll do you one better, huh? How much are they paying you? Quick. How much?
He's opened the curtains.
Dede gave me first 10,000 francs, and 15 more because I had to pay my own ticket. And when I will be back, he will give me at least 10,000 francs. Well, 10,000... No,
she adds up in her head.
10,000 francs, more or less. What are you doing?
You're in it for the money? I'm giving you the money. Then you can leave me the hell alone. $2,000, that's about 11,000 francs.
It's a bit more.
Room service.
She opens the door to Ostier and Pascal.
Oh, I'm sorry for all of you, Dr. Walker. The police would like to ask you some questions. They won't let us clean that up until they spoke to you.
Richard removes his reading spectacles and stands up. The two plainclothes cops from the police station enter.
Bonjour.
Pascal shuts the door.
Just a moment. Certainly.
He beckons Michel over to him, sits down by the bed, and signs some traveller's checks on the bedside table. He hands them to her. She hands them back to him.
I took only half.
What?
Instead of the other half you keep me with you.
Why?
I'm trusting you with my suitcase. I stay with you until you give it to them. I don't want to end up like Diddy.
He glances surreptitiously at the cops, stands up and moves close to her.
Better get out of here.
No, I won't go. Please.
I'll come to your apartment as soon as I get this straightened out.
Promise?
Yes, I promise. No scoot.
She fixes him with big sultry eyes and kisses him on the cheek.
Wait. I need a little money.
Just gave you $1,000.
That was my salary. I need for expenses.
Richard looks askance at her. Michelle puts the checks in her leather bomber jacket pocket and snatches the notes he counts her out. She hurriedly heads for the door, but one of the cops stops her.
Hey, just a minute.
The breakfast trolley arrives.
I'd like to ask you a question or two as well.
Absolutely not.
I beg your pardon.
Richard draws him to one side.
Please.
The cop, wearing a blue jacket, looks intrigued.
She doesn't know anything about this. I'm a married man. Can I have a little consideration here? Has Paris changed so much, huh?
Richard smiles slyly. The cop considers for a moment.
Hey, Castor.
The cop dismisses Michelle. She takes a croissant from the trolley as she goes. Pascal lights a fag and speaks.
So, Doctor, has anything been taken? Jewelry, clothing, anything?
Why?
Well, you must have some sort of list in order to lodge a complaint.
Well, actually, I don't wish to lodge a complaint.
Why not?
Well, the fact is, there's nothing to complain about. The truth is, I tore this place up myself. My wife and I were having a fight, and I was looking for her phone book. You're right. She does have a friend in Paris.
Pascal and Ostier smirk.
Now look, I've got an important paper to read this morning at this medical convention, and I don't want this to get out of hand. I'm sorry for the trouble. I know it's been a lot of trouble.
All right, Doctor. We understand.
Pascal, Ostier, and the two cops troop out. The cop in the powder blue jacket is last. He half closes the door, then comes back in as Richard packs his briefcase.
By the way, the concierge informs me you asked him to translate the tape with messages on it. He mentioned a name, did he?
Richard shuffles around.
Who stole that tape? That's some important medical information relating to the convention.
You wouldn't have that tape, would you?
Richard, his back to the cop, looks skywards and takes a deep breath.
No.
Richard turns and glances at him.
Well, Doctor, it may interest you to know that my colleagues have come across a man called Dédé Martin, who was in serious need of medical attention. If you should find that tape, please inform us. I hope you know what you're doing, Dr. Walker. Have a nice day.
The cop goes. Richard breaks open the cream suitcase with a knife off the trolley. A pile of clothes and the carton of Marlborough cascade onto the floor. He cuts and rips away the lining to the bottom of the case. He sags dejectedly when he finds there's no false bottom in the case. He flips over a divider and fills round the lid. There's nothing. Suddenly he reaches over for the carton of Marlborough, slits it open with his knife, and shakes the packets out. He picks up a soft pack and sniffs it. Looking wild-eyed and desperate, he tips the fags out and feels inside the packet. Nothing again. He throws down the empty wrapping impatiently. Richard, in his smart jacket and grey flannels, sits on his haunches and thinks for a moment, surveying the contents of the case, which are scattered around him on the floor. He reaches for the model of the Statue of Liberty and turns it in his hands. The model is set on a plinth. Richard tries to prise it off with a knife but fails. He taps the base, then the statue with his knife. Deciding there's nothing in it, he throws the statue aside. Later, Richard is sitting looking at the family photo. There's a square gap where the police cut out Sondra's head. He's on the phone.
Walker residence.
What's new, sweetheart?
Hi, Dad.
Nothing wild, Dad, you know.
Yeah. No, just, you know, have a nice time.
Dad, are you all right?
I'm fine, honey.
You and Mom aren't having a fight or something.
Of course not. How's Richie?
You sure you're okay, Daddy?
Absolutely. What's that music you're listening to?
Grace Jones. Why, do you like it?
Just been hearing it a lot.
You're kidding. Sounds like you and Mom are really having a good time.
Yeah. Go back to your party, honey. I love you.
I love you too, Daddy. And tell my mom I love her a lot. Give her a big kiss.
Bye, honey.
Bye, Dad.
He quickly replaces the receiver, and unable to hold back the tears, he buries his head in his hand. Richard, tie loose, mounts the spiral dark wooden staircase to Michelle's flat on the sixth floor. The stairway is painted white and looks bright and fresh. Richard reaches the top and is about to knock on Michelle's door but stops when he hears a voice inside. He puts his ear to the door.
Sit down.
Richard, holding the case, backs away from the makeshift door sign, a drawing of big red lips with the names Michelle and Sonia top and bottom. He opens a window on the landing and climbs out onto the steep rooftops. He deposits the case in the recess of a chimney breast. Standing upright on the sloping roof, he steadies himself on a nearby edge and shakily climbs further up. He picks up the case again and lifts it higher onto the pitched roof. Sweating and avoiding looking down, he stands upright and, clutching the heavy case to his chest, starts to slide along the apex of the roof. His smart leather slip-on shoes are covered in dust. He grabs at the ledge of a chimney stack to steady himself. It breaks away. He teeters. He careers down the roof but is saved by grabbing a large TV aerial, which crashes down but remains attached. Richard, breathing heavily, clings onto the case and the aerial for dear life. He hooks his arm around the aerial, and using one hand to drag the case and one hand to pull himself up, he starts to edge back up the roof, smashing a skylight as he goes. The strap fixed around the case to keep it shut bursts and the contents spew down the roof, some bouncing off into the chasm below. Richard tries hopelessly to pack the remaining gear back into the case and drag it up. He gives up. Hanging on to the aerial with both hands, he stands up and slowly works his way back to the top of the roof. Pigeons fly past as he sits unsteadily astride the apex. Richard struggles to remove a shoe and sock. He places them on the roof and accidentally nudges them, sending them sliding down towards the abyss. The shoe drops onto a ledge. Richard tosses his other shoe away. Barefooted but still in jacket and tie, he uses a chimney stack to steady himself as he gets to his feet. He jerkily makes his way along the apex of the roof, going behind the chimney, and then down across the asphalt surface. He edges towards another chimney as he heads for the gable end of a building. Hugging to the wall, he makes his way down the roof backwards on all fours. He reaches a ladder comprised only of metal bars sticking out of the concrete wall. He holds onto one of the rungs as he leans over and looks through an open skylight into Michelle's flat.
Un second. Where is it?
Je vous l'ai dit, dans ma valise.
Où, dans ta valise?
La
quoi? What?
They can teach you to talk to young girls, do they?
He climbs in through the skylight.
Keep it in English and cut the good cop, bad cop shit. There's no time for it. Come on now. We French. We understand each other, don't we? Trust us. We don't go around cutting throats. We know bandits. We're just not that kind of people.
We can protect you. Show us a little goodwill and we'll show you a little goodwill. Okay.
Richard peers round the bathroom door.
At the airport in San Francisco. blonde guy came up to you. He kissed you on both cheeks. What did he say?
Bon voyage.
He gave you something.
I already told you. He gave her a statue. A little Statue of Liberty. She put it in her suitcase.
Okay, he gave you the Statue of Liberty. You put it in the suitcase. Yes. And then?
I got on the plane.
All right, in Paris, what did you do?
I put it in the locker at La Gare du Nord.
And the key? The key to the locker?
I left it in the phone booth with chewing gum under the shelf.
Pigeons flutter off as Richard looks back out of the skylight.
Check the bathroom.
I did.
Richard has ducked into another room. The balding, bespectacled Frenchman goes to check the bathroom. He sees nothing but two pigeons mating on the edge of the skylight. He walks back to a man with dark curly hair, who's standing over the attractive and tearful Michelle.
Well, who gave you the instructions?
Didi.
Now, who else?
Nobody else. Just Didi. He's a friend of mine.
He was?
He was.
So then, you left the statue in the locker, right?
The suitcase.
The suitcase?
I was supposed to leave the statue, but I saw him at the station, and I panicked. I recognized him from the plane.
Bullshit, that's bullshit! The plane was packed. You didn't even know where I was sitting.
Oh, I saw the stewardess spill this coffee on you. He has a bad temper, huh?
Yes, he has. So you saw him at the station, right?
Uh-huh. By the lockers.
And you panicked?
Mm-hmm.
And?
And I threw the whole suitcase in the locker.
With the statue?
No, just the suitcase.
So, you took the statue out?
No, it wasn't there.
Where was the statue, dear?
In another suitcase.
What is this crap? What other suitcase? What other suitcase? What do you think we are, idiots or what?
I don't see your idea. Please.
No, you.
No, please.
You.
Don't.
You.
Where is it? Where is it? You
where,
bitch!
Where is this
I don't,
other suitcase?
I don't know where is that suitcase.
Ah,
I don't.
Honey? Honey?
You checked the bed on too, I suppose.
Richard's in bed.
I woke up and you were gone. Come back to bed.
Who is he?
He's, you know him.
You guys are making so much noise.
Well, who are you?
Michelle goes and sits on the bed and cuddles Richard.
These guys friends of yours, huh?
Not really.
He scowls blearily.
What the fuck are we talking about?
Now take it easy. There has been some mistake.
Richard gets up.
He's American. He may be crazy.
You're goddamn right. There may be some mistake.
Cool it. Just cool it, mister. We're only asking the young lady a few questions.
You're not asking her jack shit, man. Go on, get out of here. Haul ass. I haven't got all day.
I go on my own time.
You go now!
He pushes him away.
Don't mess with me, man. I am an American, and I am crazy.
The American karate kicks him. Richard, naked except for a teddy bear over his crotch, is out cold.
You stay in touch, huh?
The Statue of Liberty is upside down against a blue sky. Richard's eyes are open and looking at it as he lies on a bed. He gets up, rubs the back of his neck, and sees the statue the right way up, outside the window. He gets up and bangs his head. He winces with pain. A young woman with afro hair and robes comes into the heavily timbered room.
Ça va mieux?
Where am I, huh?
Ça va?
Huh?
Ça where? Va?
She smiles.
Where am I? Please.
She enters a small room and slides the wooden door shut. Through an open door of the dimly lit dark wood room, Richard sees a group playing on a slightly lower level. In grey flannels and with his white shirt hanging out of his trousers, he sits on the floor and slips down the few feet to the band's level. There are lots of rectangular windows along either side of the narrow wooden room they're playing in. It has a slightly arched wooden ceiling and appears to be a converted barge. Richard lurches over to the singer come keyboard player and has a word. He directs Richard up some steps and further along the boat. Richard slowly makes his way into a galley where Michelle, wearing a tight leather mini dress, is on the phone.
Vous avez des messages pour la 402?
How the hell did I get here?
My friends brought you.
She nods towards the band.
Ah bon? Et l'autre?
Richard fumbles to button his shirt.
Ah bon, d'accord, merci. She called. Your wife?
Where?
I call you a tell. She called twice. She called again at one.
He checks his watch and leaps up. He bashes his head on a doorway. Richard, now in his jacket, runs along the side of the boat, fastening up his flies as he goes. Michelle, in ankle boots, is behind him. They get off the boat and run towards her car, which is parked on a cobbled towpath in hazy sunlight. They get in and drive off.
Yeah,
Richard and the long-legged Michelle climb the steps to his hotel. His shirt tail shows beneath his jacket as he goes to reception to collect his key. Outside his room, Richard scrabbles with the lock to get inside and answer the phone. He bursts through the door.
Hello.
Michelle stands chewing her fingernails as he waits for a reply. He turns to her as she looks at him and nibbles her thumbnail. He dashes to another phone over by the bed.
Hello.
Where is it?
Hello.
Where is it?
Where's my wife?
Wait.
Fiddling with the cord, Richard stares anxiously ahead.
Hello. Hi, honey.
Walker.
I'm right here, baby. They haven't hurt you, have they?
Oh, I...
Sandra.
All right, you talk to her.
Michelle walks over.
Please don't frighten her. Don't make her scared.
Don't worry, she's just a bit tired.
I've got the thing you want. What do you want me to do?
Yellow level at the Bobur parking.
Wait. Say it again, please.
Bobur parking, yellow level. You got it? Bring the statue, doctor.
When?
Now. And doctor, don't be stupid. Or else, beautiful Mrs. Walker goes bye-bye.
Richard replaces the receiver and turns grimly to Michelle. The model of the Statue of Liberty lies perilously close to the edge of a roof, next to Richard's discarded shoe. Michelle holds onto Richard's hand as she leans out over the roof and picks it up. She turns to him and smiles. Slipping, she grabs for both his hands and drops the statue. Richard hauls Michelle back on the roof. Her black stockings have holes in them, and she stares into Richard's eyes desperately as she clings onto him. Michelle and Richard run to the shattered statue lying on the pavement. Richard picks up the bottom half and pulls out a small battery-shaped device with four wires poking out of it.
What is it?
I don't know.
He pushes the object back in and fits the top half of the statue over it.
You got some tape?
A yellow stripe runs down the white plasterwork of a staircase. Michelle and Richard come down the steps to a yellow-painted metal door with a sign in French on it. Richard pulls open the door, and they enter an underground car park. A long, broken line of white strip lighting illuminates the large garage. Richard, looking edgy, stands holding the statue with both hands. Rows of parked cars flank him back and front. He walks over to Michelle, pauses, and then hands her the statue.
Right, I want you to take this and go behind that truck and don't come out until I tell you.
Okay, I'm scared. Are you?
I'm scared shitless. Go on.
Merde. In French, it's good luck to say merde. You're not supposed to answer.
She puts her fingers to his lips to silence him and then goes to hide behind a white van. Richard, tall, angular, and with blondish hair, walks away from the area of the van and stands waiting in the middle of the garage. Hands behind his back, he looks around apprehensively. Suddenly, at a far end of the garage, a car appears at the brightly lit entrance. Its yellow headlights flare as it approaches slowly in the shadowiness of the car park. A second car's headlights follow. Richard turns to face them, but moves aside slightly. The second car, a Peugeot, stops, leaving its lights on. The first car, a blue BMW, pulls up and kills its lights. Richard hurries towards it, but it pulls away. The BMW stops. Richard runs alongside and leans down to the passenger window. Sandra, her face pale and her eyes moist with tears, presses her palms to the window. Sitting behind her is a suited Middle Eastern man with a moustache. He winds down the window.
Lady Liberty?
Let my wife out first!
He holds a knife to Sandra's neck.
Stop. I'll get the girl. She's got it. Michelle!
Still holding Sandra, the mustachioed Middle Eastern man looks behind him.
Michelle!
She steps out from beside the white van.
Come on!
Clasping the statuette to her chest, Michelle walks towards the BMW. The Peugeot remains lurking in the background as Michelle stops.
Come on!
First, tell them to give me my bread!
What are you doing? Don't do this! Bring it here! Give it to them!
No! Never!
Michelle! Watch out! Go!
The curly-haired American and bespectacled Frenchman from Michelle's flat have appeared. The American runs after Michelle, who drops the statue as the BMW speeds away. The Peugeot starts to move. Richard runs after the BMW with the device from inside the statue as the Frenchman shoots at the Peugeot, causing it to crash. Richard runs to the Peugeot, pushes the dead driver's foot out the way, slams his on the accelerator and speeds off. Michelle clambers onto the boot and squirms in through the smashed rear window. The American and Frenchman run up behind as Michelle gestures with her raised fist towards them. They slow up and stop. At the exit barrier, a parking attendant leaps out the way as Richard drives through. Richard, squeezed up next to the dead driver, races the battered Peugeot through crammed city streets after the BMW, which is a few cars in front. Michelle reaches over from the back seat and pulls the dead driver's wallet from inside his leather jacket. She looks at it for a moment, then casts it to one side. Richard strains to see the BMW amongst a line of traffic. Cars edge out from a side street. The traffic ahead slows to a stop, a queue forming across all four lanes of the boulevard. Richard weaves across to the left-hand side and finds himself blocked in. Exasperated, he throws up his hand. Michelle keeps hold of the dead driver's dark hair to stop him lolling about in his seat. As the traffic starts to move, Richard lurches forwards. Eventually, he comes to an abrupt halt by a zebra crossing. A crowd gathers as Richard and Michelle emerge from the car. Richard has the driver flat out on his back across the front seats. He pumps at his chest, trying to revive him. Blood pulses from the man's mouth. Michelle tugs on Richard's jacket. He lifts the man's head out the way and closes the door. Michelle takes Richard's hand and they run off down the street. Later, Richard's on a payphone to the head of services, Williams.
We're in a blue BMW. Four doors, license plate number 1068PD. 9-2. Got it? They had a knife at her throat. Hello? You hear what I'm saying to you?
Yeah. A knife at her throat. All right. Go on.
Go on? Where go on? God damn it, my wife's being held for ransom.
Yeah, I know. I got that too. But let's see now. They were after this electronic gizmo. A Crytron. Whatever. Now, what about this other gang? The one that came along in the Peugeot?
Richard shakes his fist.
Williams, the other gang was on foot. The guy in the Peugeot was with them, with the kidnappers. He's dead. He's in his car on the Rue de Rivoli.
I'm not quite sure what you mean by them, Doctor. Oh, hold on a minute. Please excuse me. I've got to take this call.
Richard stares incredulous, his eyes darting wildly. Disheveled strands of hair hanging over his sweating brow. With the receiver clamped to his ear, he shifts around, exasperated.
Hello? Yeah, Doctor?
Yes.
What number are you calling from?
How would I know what number?
He looks the payphone up and down.
I'm in a cafe of the Paris Midi.
Paris? How do you spell it?
Richard shakes with rage.
With an S for shithead!
He slams the phone down. At a sink, Richard rinses his hands and face, then runs his hands through his hair. He takes a comb from inside his jacket and straightens up, then stops and stares into a mirror. Squinting, he leans forwards and regards his face, which is taut and haunted. Richard walks back up into the cafe where Michelle's at a table going through the Peugeot driver's wallet. Standing on its end is the cylindrical black device with four wires poking out of it. The Crytron. Richard sits opposite Michelle.
Those guys are supposed to be loaded. Look at this. 200 francs. Could you believe it?
What is this?
His wallet.
Whose wallet?
The dead guy.
You took his wallet?
I wasn't supposed to. He doesn't need it anymore.
He puts his glasses on.
Let me see.
He pulls out a pink driving license and looks at the picture of the man, who has a bushy moustache. Michelle pulls out some cards.
Born in Cyprus.
Look at this.
The black cards have a touch of class and a palm tree printed in gold on them.
It's a nightclub.
You know it?
Yeah, sure. It's for old drugs and really square. It's full of rich Arabs. Greeks, too.
She eats a sandwich.
You've been there?
Once, Didier Martin took me.
He grabs at the wallet's contents. She snatches back some cash.
Waiter?
As Richard turns for the waiter, Williams and the balding security officer bound in. Williams throws out his hands.
Well, Dr. Walker, I must admit, it looks like you were right.
About what?
Is that the...
Yes.
Williams points at the Crytron standing on the table between Richard and Michelle. Williams reaches for it. Richard grabs it. The two men sit down. Williams glances at his colleague.
Doug?
Doug looks at Michelle.
Well, you can talk in front of Michelle. She knows more about this than you do. All right. Who's got my wife?
We believe they're Arabs.
Well, that's news.
We're playing catch-up ball here, Doctor. All we know is they're Arab agents.
He points at the device.
You ever heard of Crytron before, Doctor?
No.
No, I must admit, neither had I. It's an electronic triggering device. A miniature high-performance switch capable of withstanding severe shock and vibration.
What's it for?
It's used in missile separation and for triggering the detonation of nuclear devices.
Richard stares at them, puts the Crytron down, and points at it.
This thing sets off atomic bombs?
That's what they're after.
It was stolen from the manufacturer.
We were lucky it was found by a U.S. citizen.
Oh, man, I should have asked for 20,000 francs, at least.
Who are the two guys in her apartment?
Probably on our side.
Our side? Your side?
We're doing everything we can to help your wife, Dr. Walker. We've put a lot of pressure on the French Minister of Interior.
We brought in Interpol into this. I've already sent a telex off to the State Department.
Now, I think priority one is to get this to a safe location.
And where might that be?
To the embassy.
This is Sandra's life.
The device doesn't belong to you, Dr. Walker.
It doesn't belong to you either.
It belongs to me. I brought it over.
She snatches it. The three men grab at her hand, and the Crytron rolls under the table. As the men scramble for it, Michelle sprays an aerosol in their faces. The Crytron rolls out from under the table. Michelle picks it up, yanks Richard up, and runs out with him. Williams and Doug get to their feet, holding their hands over their faces, as Michelle and Richard run out onto the street, overturning a cafe table as they go. Michelle drags Richard, his hand still over his eyes, across the street. At the converted barge, Michelle applies eye drops to Richard's reddened right eye as he sits in a chair with his head tilted back. He reaches up and widens his left eye, and Michelle applies more drops. He wipes his face with a hanky.
Don't touch my face.
He screws up his face. Michelle's friends are congregated in the lounge area.
Michelle
walks through the barge. The afro-haired woman holds up some clothes for her. Michelle goes back to Richard, who's at a table clutching the Crytron.
What about this? Can't take this with us.
Michelle grabs a coffee tin, opens it up, rams the Crytron into the coffee and slams the lid back on. She casts a cat-like smile at Richard. That evening, Richard, in a pale suit, and Michelle wearing a tight orange mini-dress laced up at the back, get out of a taxi and step up to a gaudy nightclub entrance. A neon sign above the door reads, "A touch of class." Richard looks Michelle over.
"You look nice."
Richard's face is fraught. Michelle links her arm into Richard's, and they both walk up to the door. He presses a button under a notice that reads, "Club Privé," and in a small square window set in the door, a slider is pulled back, and a hard-faced man peers through. The man, wearing a tuxedo, opens the door and they walk inside.
The more I see you.
The doorman leads them into the Louche Club. Elegantly dressed couples sit at round tables eating and drinking. Michelle and Richard sit on a chintzy couch. Richard beckons the doorman to him and gets out a credit card.
"I want to know whether you'll take this card."
"Of course. American Express."
"Do me a favor. Go and see."
"No problem. I assure you."
"I insist."
Frowning, the doorman takes the card and walks off. The ceiling, made up of fragmented mirrors, glitters. Richard squeezes up next to Michelle on the L-shaped couch. Michelle scowls at him.
"I can't stand this music.
The more I see."
Michelle gets to her feet and wanders over to the DJ booth. A bespectacled, mustachioed man dining with a group at a round table nearby smiles over at Richard.
"Can we be you?"
"I'm done."
Richard turns away.
"Dr. Whitlovely, Cairo Cardiology Convention 1981, you remember?"
"Oh yes, how are you? Nice to see you."
"This is him. This is Dr. Richard Walker. We were all waiting for your lecture today." "Let me introduce you. Dr. Alula, Dr. Bouzi, Professor Sherif from the Clinique des Oliviers, best surgeon in Tunisia."
Richard bumps into a champagne bucket.
"I'm sorry."
"What happened? Did you have some problem or did you have too much champagne like us?"
Michelle returns.
"Dance?"
"Yes,
I see.
Kirche Laval.
He playfully wags his finger at Richard as Michelle drags him away to the dance floor, which is packed with tuxedoed men and glamorous women dripping with jewellery. Michelle slinks sensuously to the music with her left arm around Richard's shoulder and her right hand in his. Richard responds stiffly. A heavy-set, curly-haired man in a brown suit leans against a glass panel watching. Richard glances at him, then keeps his eyes on Michelle, who swings her hips ever more seductively. She faces Richard, and holding his sides, gyrates forwards and backwards. Richard grasps Michelle's hands and keeps her at a distance. Watching from a couch is a slimy-looking guy smoking a cigarette. Richard tries to keep up with Michelle, who moves around the illuminated dance floor eagerly on stiletto heels. A distinguished-looking older man dancing with a blonde watches as Michelle encircles Richard, whose face is set in an anxious frown. Michelle writhes up and down, keeping her eyes on Richard, who runs his hands along her arms and takes hold of her clenched fists. Michelle dances on, oblivious. He shadows me back home. Michelle fluidly sways Richard's arms back and forth, then lifts his arm up and turns under it. She sways towards, then away from him. Richard continues to move stiffly and awkwardly as Michelle clasps her hands either side of his head. In an anxious moment, Richard, close to tears, wraps his arms around Michelle's waist and holds her close to him. He then swings her back and forth. With her hands clasped around Richard's, Michelle continues to dance enraptured. Richard becomes distracted, mouth slightly ajar. He leads Michelle away from the dance floor. Sitting beside the small round table in front of the L-shaped couch is the Middle Eastern man who held a knife to Sandra's neck in the BMW. Richard and Michelle go over and sit perched on the edge of the couch facing the man, who lays Richard's credit card on the table.
We take American Express. I've got something else too.
He hands the man the Peugeot driver's wallet.
Where is he?
Dead.
Those Israeli dogs. It's most regretted you were followed.
It's more likely you were followed.
We still have your wife, Doctor.
And I still have what you want.
Then I propose another exchange.
Richard points at him.
And this time, I decide how it's going to be done. You'll hear from me.
Very well. So everybody's in your hands, Doctor.
That's right.
Michelle and Richard walk out. The man has a sip of white wine. Streetlights reflected on the River Seine send up a shimmering glow on the side of the converted barge. In the distance, the Eiffel Tower glows like an iridescent needle, piercing the inky blue-black night sky. A flood-lit tourist boat glides under the sleek Grinnell Bridge. On the other bank, raised on a plinth, is the scaled-down replica of the Statue of Liberty, with her torch held skywards. On the barge, Richard is looking out the window. In the lounge, Michelle is asleep in an armchair with her leather jacket draped across her side. Shadows move through the barge, cast by the line of spotlights along the roof of the tourist boat. Sightseers on board the boat are silhouetted against the harsh lights. The sculpted robes around the Statue of Liberty are thrown into harsh contrast. The coffee tin sits on the table, with 2 500-franc notes under it. Richard draws lines in spilt coffee. He has the telephone receiver to his ear.
Yes?
Are you ready?
Yes.
5 a.m. On the bridge by the Statue of Liberty.
A pale blue early morning light surrounds the Statue of Liberty replica, its torch aloft. His jacket collar turned up, Richard stands on the Grinnell Bridge, staring intently. He turns towards a cluster of modern office blocks to see a Mercedes with its headlights on drive over the bridge past him. A breeze gently buffets Richard's suit trousers. He has his arms folded tightly across his chest. Richard exhales heavily, his eyes nervously dart from side to side. Michelle appears, wearing her leather jacket over her mini-dress. She marches up to Richard. As the breeze blows strands of Michelle's hair around her face, she stares indignantly at Richard, then stuffs the franc note into his breast pocket.
You broke your word. You were to keep me with you.
I'm sorry. It's dangerous.
I don't need your money, Walker.
As Michelle regards Richard, he reaches over and zips up her leather jacket.
It's cold.
Richard nervously glances at Michelle, who looks past him down to the river. She steps to the steel barrier at the edge of the bridge and looks down. A white speedboat with three people on it pulls up by the bank. Richard and Michelle run to the other side of the bridge and down a ramp. They run down some steps that lead to the riverbank, underneath the bridge structure. Richard and Michelle run along under the bridge as the speedboat approaches. Standing in the front is the Middle Eastern man from the club. At his side is a curly-haired associate. Standing in the back is Sondra. The boat pulls up by some steps.
Hold it there!
Richard and Michelle stop a few yards from the boat.
Let's see!
Richard takes the Crytron from his pocket and holds it up. The man looks through binoculars, then points at Michelle, while the curly-haired man ties up the boat.
Give it to the girl!
Staring at the man, Richard hands the Crytron to Michelle.
She comes alone!
My wife first!
Richard emphatically holds up a finger. The Middle Eastern man gives his associate a nod, and he moves over to the steps, where he helps Sondra up onto the bank. Michelle starts to walk towards the boat. Sondra, wearing a red dress, walks along towards Richard. Passing Michelle, Sondra breaks into a run and propels herself into Richard's arms. They hug each other tightly. Reaching the boat, Michelle stares down at the men.
Give me my money or I'll throw your fucking thing in the river.
Money? What money?
I still wasn't paid.
I don't have any money.
Oh, really?
She lifts her arm.
How much?
10,000 francs. Oh, quick.
He turns to his colleague, then spins back and grabs Michelle's ankle. She sprawls across the gravel, dropping the Crytron.
Freeze!
Two men on the bridge.
Nobody move! Nobody fucking move!
The girl brings it up here! Now!
It's the American and the bespectacled Frenchman, both armed. The curly-haired man pulls a machine gun and fires on them. The Middle Eastern man grabs Michelle. As he backs away with his associate, who's holding the Crytron, the associate takes a hit from the attackers on the bridge. Richard breaks away from Sondra. Holding Michelle, the Middle Eastern man peers out from behind the plinth of the Statue of Liberty. He's fired on from the bridge. Pistol in hand, he grabs Michelle and holds her in front of him. Richard appears and leaps on top of the man, flooring him. Michelle bites the man's hand.
Just go!
Having made the man drop his gun, Michelle runs off. The man lays into Richard, who flips him over and starts to pummel him about the face. Like a man possessed, Richard grabs the man around the throat and slams his head against the hard ground. The man reaches up and flips open his flick knife. As Richard holds the man off, he turns Richard over and pins him down. The man pulls his knife hand free. One of the men on the bridge shoots him and he collapses over Richard. Richard gets to his feet. In his last gasps, the Middle Eastern man grabs his gun and aims at Michelle. Michelle falters, losing one of her high-heeled shoes. Lying on the ground, the Middle Eastern man flails his arm in the air, emptying his gun, then flops onto his back. Michelle limps away, scooping up the Crytron from the Middle Eastern man's dead associate as she does so. Michelle screws her eyes up in pain as she reaches the bridge where Sondra takes her in her arms and lays her on the ground.
Oof. It hurts.
Sondra looks at the hand she's been holding Michelle with. It's covered in blood. Richard runs over and kneels down beside Michelle. Sondra shows him her hand. Michelle's breathing becomes erratic.
I'm cold. I'm cold, Walker.
You'll be fine, baby. You'll be fine. You'll be all right.
He strokes Michelle's face, then fastens up her jacket. As he does so, she slips the Crytron into his jacket pocket. Sondra leans over Michelle attentively, holding her arm.
Oh.
overshadowed by the Statue of Liberty monument, Sondra strokes Michelle's hair.
Don't leave me alone.
Richard stares down at Michelle, heavy-browed. Her eyes slowly open wide, and she is motionless. Richard feels the pulse in her neck. As he does so, the American man and the Frenchman run down the steps from the bridge and along the bank towards them. Richard presses his ear down to Michelle's chest, listening for her heartbeat. He then hangs his head despondently over her for a moment. He slowly rises to see the two men approaching. Holding hands, Sondra and Richard spring to their feet to face the men. Richard takes the Krytron from his pocket and holds it out as if offering it to them.
This is what you want.
As the Frenchman steps forwards, Richard throws the Krytron into the Seine. The two men stare agog. Eyeing them disdainfully, Richard heaves an exasperated sigh. He squats down and picks Michelle up in his arms. With Sondra at his side, he marches between the men. They walk away. Richard carries Michelle along the gravel bank. The Eiffel Tower stands prominently against an icy sky. Later, Richard sits with his arm around Sondra in the back of a taxi stuck in traffic behind a refuse truck. With his forehead resting against his hand, Richard's face is deeply furrowed, consumed with emotion. He breathes heavily, then looks at Sondra.
I love you, baby.
Tearful, they embrace.
I love you.
They hug each other tightly as the refuse truck pulls into the distance. ITFC audio description by Tom Worley, Lonnie Evans, Helen Vasey, and Matthew Vickers.